Thanks, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the final afternoon of BCA's 2019 convention. Can I introduce your host for this session, our National Policy Manager, Angela Jeske.
Thank you very much, John, and thank you all for sticking it out and being here after lunch on the last day of convention. I know it's a bit of a struggle, but we'll get there. I hope you all were able to get a bit of a sugar hit with the lunch bags just now. As John said, I'm the Policy and Advocacy Manager here at BCA. And, yeah, it's a real pleasure to be facilitating this session on the NDIS and My Aged Care, removing the roadblocks to choice and control. But first, I would like to acknowledge the traditional and original owners of the land here in Hobart, the Muwina people. And I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners, past, present and future, and today's Tasmanians who are the custodians of this land. It's a great pleasure to introduce to you all Matthew Wright, the Branch Manager of Engagement and Strategy and Support at the National Disability Insurance Agency. He has the responsibility for national engagement and national events. Matthew has over 20 years' experience in the disability sector, previously being Chief Executive Officer of the Australian Federation of Disability Organisations and Murray Human Services, and a Senior Manager with Oakley Centre and Able Australia. Matthew has represented Australians with disability at the UN Conference of State Parties, has been a member of the AHRC Reference Panel on the National Inquiry into Employment Discrimination, IAC's Housing Innovations Working Group, the National Law Reform Commission's Disability Advisory Committee, the National Disability Workforce Strategy Committee, and the Victorian Government's NDIS Implementation Task Force. Matthew holds a Bachelor of Arts and Postgraduate Diploma in HAM and IR from the University of Melbourne, and is a Fellow of the Williamson Community Leadership Program with Leadership Victoria. Matthew has hearing loss from birth and identifies as part of the deaf community. And I'm sure, Matthew, you'll all agree that Matthew's very qualified to speak here at our event. And, let's welcome him very warmly.
Thank you so much for that lovely introduction. Hi, everyone. It's lovely to be here in Hobart today. I would also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet and pay my respects to the elders both past and present. I would also like to thank Blind Citizens Australia, the CEO Emma Bennison and Board Chair John Simpson for the invitation to join you for the annual National Convention. It's great to be here on behalf of the NDIA to talk about the National Disability Insurance Scheme and more specifically removing the roadblocks to choice and control. So a little bit about me, as mentioned before, that I am a person with a disability. I was deaf from birth. That means I don't hear sounds like S, F, T, H, and many of my conversations are guesswork. As a result, I often need to attempt to control the flow of topics in conversations to ensure that I'm receiving the information that I need to make critical decisions. So standing at the podium is a place where I'm very comfortable. As mentioned before, I did have a 20-year history in the disability sector, but I've also had the good fortune to work very closely with a number of blind and vision-impaired leaders. When I started out, I worked in employment and worked closely with local identity Doug McGinn in a team that Doug affectionately referred to as See No Evil, Hear No Evil. Sorry to those of you who've heard that joke before, but like footy, I believe in repeat entries, which is why if you invite me next year, you'll hear it again. I was also very fortunate that when I worked at AFDO, I worked with Robin Gale and Jessica Zammit and Leah Van Poppel. And the great thing about AFDO is that everybody had a disability, so other characteristics of people tended to be much more interesting or discussed than the disability. So in Robin and Leah's case, their emotional intelligence was often off the charts. They'd always greet me in the morning and say, "How are you doing this fine morning, Matt?" And if it was before coffee, the answer would be, If it was after, the answer would be, "Lovely, how are you today?" And with Jessica, you could always tell what kind of day she was having by how hard she was tapping the keyboard. Clickety, click, click, cool, everything's okay. If it was tappity, tap, tap, "Cheryl, clear my diary and set up a meeting with Jess." Of course, there were natural advantages to deaf and blind people working together. I could lean over in a meeting and say, "What are they saying?" and get the lowdown. And likewise, Robin or Jess could lean over and say, "What's a body language looking like?" Of course, the downside would be that the person in the meeting would be like, "Guys, I'm right here." And we say, "You just relax for 3 minutes. This is our appropriate adjustment." Now I work closely with Marianne Diamond on what I believe will be the game changer for people with disability in this country. So I'm going to take everyone through just a little bit of a NDIS 101 and talk about what we're doing for people who are blind and vision impaired. So as a brief history of how the NDIS came to be, in 2009, 10 years ago, a report called Shutout, led by Professor Rhonda Galbally and ably supported by Every Australian Counts CEO Kirsten Dean, began to shed light on the exclusion of people with disability from our society in Australia. Intense political lobbying followed by all parts of the sector, and the Every Australian Counts campaign for the NDIS gathered unstoppable momentum. The NDIS recognises the fundamental role of individuals to self-determine their own supports and exercise choice and control in our own lives. In Australia, approximately 4 million, or 1 in 5 people, have a disability. Of these 4 million, around 460,000 are expected to be eligible for the NDIS, and we refer to these people as participants. Every participant is a person that has a significant and permanent disability and will likely require support for the rest of their life. The main goal of the NDIS is to support people with disability and their families to live an ordinary life, and that's a life as part of the community like anybody else. Each participant is provided with an individual budget which they can spend on supports and services that relate to their disability under the NDIS Act, and this is referred to as reasonable and necessary. The adoption of individualised budgets for people with disability is a fundamental shift in the way in which disability support is provided. Prior to the NDIS, disability providers received millions of dollars in government funding to deliver services, but these services were rationed and you got what you were given, which was rarely enough. As of the 31st of December 2018, 7,270 people with the primary disability of blind or vision impaired are now NDIS participants. More than 11,400 children are being supported through the scheme's Early Childhood Intervention Gateway, and over 250,000 Australians with disability are now NDIS participants, and 1 in 3 of these people are receiving supports for the very first time. There are now more than 19,000 NDIS registered service providers, and that means participants are able to shop around, choose their service provider, and get the best deal for themselves. For the disability sector, which has been used to receiving block grants from the government, this is a dramatic change to operations. And the NDIS is not just individual funding packages, the NDIA is also investing in the capacity building of the community to help build a more inclusive community for people with disability, not just participants of the NDIS through ILC and LAC. So what are we doing to remove barriers for people who are blind or vision impaired? We are committed to improving our communications products to ensure that they are accessible, and we are always seeking feedback on NDIS publications and products to ensure that they are accessible for people with disability. The NDIA has an existing agreement with Vision Australia to ensure that NDIS participants can receive information in accessible format, including braille, electronic text, audio, CD and large text at no cost. From March this year, participants can now select their preferred method of communication, and this is noted on the NDIA business system. Previously, the business system had noticed that a participant would like communication in alternative format, but required further investigation in the participant's record to determine their preferred method. The agency is also investigating on how to automatically produce communication in a participant's preferred format, removing the existing manual process that enables alternative formats to be ordered through Vision Australia. This will ensure that all communication, including large-scale communication to all participants, will be in the participant's preferred format. Improvements to the participant portal are also planned, which will allow participants to update their communication preferences directly in the portal. Recent improvements and initiatives include establishing a minimum standard for accessibility and production of documents in accessible formats like braille, CD and screen reading, and the new NDIS participant booklets on self-management guide and access request forms have been made available in braille. The NDIS participant booklets and self-management guide are also available on the NDIS website in accessible Word document format, as well as accessible tag PDF, which can be read by screen readers. The easy English versions of these booklets are also available for screen readers and available on the NDIS website as well. The agency is currently investigating large print and audio available via podcast or sound file options for the booklet. Our new website was launched earlier this year to improve the user experience. We invited feedback from participants, families, carers, providers and sector representatives, including Blind Citizens Australia, who had a critical role in helping us make the website accessible and easier to navigate and more user-friendly. The NDIA acknowledges the number of concerns that people have raised around decisions on braille technology. As such, further advice around braille and braille technology has been drafted to help inform NDIA staff when discussions are taking place with participants regarding policy and guidance. We also were aware that some providers of vision technology have been increasingly adding to the cost of training for new users into their quotes for supply. So the NDIA will continue discussions with the sector on reasonable costs associated with training, trialling and training of assistive technology and possible approaches that may support or lease of assistive technology. We have also redesigned our assistive technology home modification assessment templates to be fully accessible to those who use screen readers and magnifiers. In relation to dog guides, historically funding for dog guides has been provided through philanthropic means, which has possibly contributed to the lack of information being provided to inform a delegate decision. A working party has been set up with the NDIA and Australian Blindness Forum representatives to discuss the information required by delegates. This has led to the development of assistive technology dog guide assessment template, which is expected to be released in the next few weeks. Once finalised, we anticipate this template will assist dog guide organisations to provide relevant information, thereby speeding up the delegate's ability to make informed, reasonable and necessary decisions without the need to request additional information. The agency has also been reviewing staff training and the ways in which we can upskill our planners and local area coordinators. We continue to work with peak disability organisations to improve and develop our disability awareness training. Blind Citizens has been critically involved in the development of disability snapshots provided to all planners and LAC staff. To conclude my address today, these are some of the examples of how the NDIA is reducing barriers to the NDIS for people who are blind and vision impaired. and we continue to work with organisations like Blind Citizens Australia to improve communications, technology, information and the experience for all participants, families, carers and providers. I just want to make one final observation. We know that there's a lot of issues to work through, and we embrace both the scrutiny and the criticism because people with disability like us should have a fundamental right denied for many years, and the right, that is the right to be treated like a customer. I hope you will continue to demand more from us, but also to hang on to the vision that we all share of people with disability not separated or segregated, but part of the community like any other citizen. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matt. That was a really informative speech, and yeah, it's great to hear that journey from the, you know, of where we are now from the beginning of the NDIS and the changes that you've got planned as well. So that's really great, and it's great to see hear some updates from you as well. I know we've been talking to you quite what's the word? Diplomatically. Constantly, yes, but diplomatically, about some of those, especially around the preferred formats and the frustrations around that. So that's great to hear that update, especially. And we look forward to an extra update around large print and audio versions of those documents too. We will have time for questions for Corey after a little bit later in the session. But I would like to introduce Corey Earlham, who is... Hang on, just get my notes in the right order. So first of all, I should say we did try very hard to get a representative from the Department of Health and Ageing, which looks after my aged care, but unfortunately they were unable to attend. So Corey Earlham, who is the Director of Advocacy and Government Relations for COTA Australia, which is the Council of the Ageing Australia, has very kindly agreed to link in via Zoom for us today. So we're very grateful for Corey for attending here. I will also just acknowledge that Corey isn't a government representative. So COTA does a lot of advocacy work around aged care and does, yeah, quite high level advocacy work there. So he's definitely all across all of the issues. But just to be aware that he's not speaking on behalf of government, but just from that, but still from that policy and advocacy and government relations perspective. So I'll just introduce Corey. Corey has been with COTA since April 2013, working in the National Aged Care Alliance's Aged Care Reform Secretariat, first as Principal Policy Officer and later as the Aged Care Reform Policy Manager. As part of this role, Corey has led the development of a number of policy positions for COTA Australia and the Alliance, including the development of the Integrated Customer Supports position and improving access to assistive technologies for older Australians. Corey has a Master's in Public Policy and a Master's in Business Administration. He has worked for a range of state and national organisations focused on improving the health and human rights of various populations. Before working in the community sector, Corey worked in the corporate sector in various marketing roles, including direct communications, digital marketing, marketing operations and event management. So I'm sure you'll agree that Corey's very well equipped and knowledgeable to present for this session today, and I'd like to welcome him now.
Thank you very much. So I'm going to just make some remarks because I'm keen to be able to move to the Q&A session and hear from you about the issues that you're facing. But as you heard from the introduction, I'm unfortunately not able to solve the problems of my aged care. I'm only able to join you in the battle to improve it, if you like. Part of what I've worked on for the Council of the Ageing while we've been working with aged care providers, health professionals, other consumer organisations as part of the National Aged Care Alliance about 2.5 years ago was looking at the interface between the disability sectors and the aged care sector. And that culminated in a good discussion paper that you can find on naca.asn.au. That's naca.asn.au. And what we identified back in August 2016 was that we really weren't seeing the aged care system being designed for people with a disability over the age of 65. We were assuming that the types of services that people would receive were similar, and largely they are in many regards. But the specific needs of people with a disability is somewhat different, we feel, and we're trying to encourage the government to agree with that, than we see for people who are getting older, where they're largely judged on their frailty. And a good example of this is somebody who has vision impairment, blindness, low vision, and they're going across to the aged care assessment team or the ACAT team, and inside there they conduct a national screening and assessment form, and lo and behold, there's nothing to actually identify the person's particular conditions, the person's particular assistive technologies needs, the supports that they require specifically relating to their vision impairment. There's simply a question of whether or not, yes or no, you have issues with your vision. And then it's relied upon with the particular staff member of ACAT to unpack what that means. So what we identified with the National Aged Care Alliance is that we'd like to see that there be some condition-specific, disability-specific assessments, one of them being blindness, to be able to identify the best supports that people can receive. Now, there's a whole range of implications that come from that. One, making sure that materials are sent out from My Aged Care in the appropriate format that somebody can actually interpret and read themselves, whether that be in Braille or large print format. And there is some work being done towards doing that, but it's not very well understood and it's not very well communicated. Two, we'd like to see that the aged care system is able to make referrals, like the disability system is, to somebody like Vision Australia, for example, just one example of many, who actually can provide the specific tailored supports that somebody with vision impairment may require. Three, we'd like to ensure that if somebody needs a little bit of extra assistance, for example, somebody to translate for them, that they're not having to choose between that a support service that they're receiving and the general services that they require, domestic assistance, housing, etc. So in other words, the principle of equity, that people are able to be supported with a little bit extra to be able to receive the supports that they need. So they're just some of the things that we identified 2.5 years ago and talked about with government. And, you know, to be fair to them, I think they're starting to move on it. I think there's been good discussions around how do we improve the use and access of assistive technologies with people via their home care packages or via Commonwealth Home Support Program. I think there's a long way to go about how individuals can get better support in residential care. There is not yet an agreement to look at the National Screening Assessment Form in the way that we'd like, and there's certainly not the clarity about making sure that somebody who's on disability or somebody who's funded under the NDIS, with a disability, or somebody funded under the aged care system with disability is receiving equitable levels of service. So we have a long way to go to be able to do that. But working with people like Blind Citizens Australia and other consumer organisations, I have every confidence that we'll be able to get there. We're seeing some improvements in the way that My Aged Care has been built for screening functionalities, and we hope to see further improvements on that in the coming months to a year when they roll out a new version of My Aged Care. So I'm going to try and talk now just a little bit about assistive technologies and the work that we completed about a year ago now, just over a year ago. And we worked with Professor Dr. Natasha Layton to look at a little bit of a model of how could assistive technologies be funded. And you'll see this paper also on naca.asn.au. And what we identified there was that there was a very poor use or very poor understanding within the ageing system about assistive technologies, and that would like to start with a little bit of funding and information for people to see what is the most appropriate service for them to receive. So things like the information linking centres and ILCs, independent living centres, sorry, I'm getting confused between two different things, and see that that information is shared not just in the disability sector but also in the ageing sector for people to be able to realise that there is a service out there for them to go and talk about their specific assistive technology needs. The National Aged Care Alliance and CODA supports this, proposes that there should be a dedicated assistive technology program for older Australians, and the government should increase their investment in that. One of the starting points for that, unfortunately, is we often get calls of CODA saying that there's a lack of clarity about where does somebody go. Do they start with a state and territory program like SWEP in Victoria, or do they start with My Aged Care? And it's not always clear cut depending on their particular needs. So whilst we're building towards this national program, let's just actually explain to people what the existing programs are and how they interact. One of the more policy wonk things that we'll probably look at when this goes through is there's a lack of appropriate standards for secondhand equipment that happens in the ageing system quite a lot. And when that's purchased, not from a particular company, but maybe from somebody who's owned it beforehand, how do we ensure that those programs, funding from government, has the appropriate standards around what they need to utilise? And I guess the last thing that I wanted to talk about was the need within the aged care workforce for there to be specialised advice and capacity building for people to be able to pick up the specific supports that people need. There isn't a lot of programs within aged care to train workforce members on the specific needs of people with a disability or the particular usages of assistive technology beyond some of the allied health prescribers of those pieces of equipment like OTs and physios. So how can we more broadly make it commonplace, understood with the frontline workforce so that they're comfortable in A, suggesting it, but B, supporting somebody while they're performing their day-to-day duties in the work that they do. So there's a number of good assistive technology models out there that we think can be replicated, and we've suggested some of those there for government to look at. This is unfortunately a complex piece of area because it involves both state and federal governments. It involves Department of Social Services as the program responsible, or department responsible for the policy area of disability, Department of Health, which is the funder and program deliverer for aged care. And so we will continue to be working with people like Blind Citizens Australia and others to continue those conversations with government through the election and into the next one. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Corey. That was a great update. And, it's great to see that the sector is working together really well, that it's not just the blindness and vision impairment sector, but the broader disability and ageing sector as well. That's really... we are singing off the same song sheet, as they say, although we hear the choir tonight, so shouldn't jump ahead too far. That was a really informative update. Yeah, so thank you so much, and it's great to see this hard work continuing, and to see that real focus on access to the aged care system as well. So now we do have some time scheduled for some question and answers for both Corey via Zoom and also Matt at the table here. So so we've got a few questions. So we'll start with Duncan.
Hi Matt, congratulations on coming to this forum. It's probably a fairly interesting one to come to, given some of the things that have been going on with communications in the NDIS currently. I'd like to congratulate you on taking steps in the right direction in terms of accessibility. But I think those steps still probably need to go forwards, as you rightly pointed out. My question is, and regarding the danger of the way the NDIS is structured, it talks a lot about the individual, but for me, I think that's a dangerous premise because it kind of doesn't look at the individual in the context of society. And I'm wondering, to what level is the social model taken into account in terms of the NDIS? And in that respect, in what respect will a universal access model be implemented in terms of document access, and not retrospective document access, but inbuilt universal access design mentality be implemented?
Yeah, terrific question. So I think you need to separate two things. So number one, how influential is the social model? It is incredibly influential. So the social model of people with disability being part of our community is absolutely a fundamental cornerstone of why the NDIS exists. It is enshrined and protected by the Independent Advisory Council, and the agency is absolutely committed to a vision of people with disability being part of the community. I think you need to then separate the NDIS that is in practice at the moment, where we are building from the ground up all of the systems and processes to incorporate 460,000 people with disability in a 3 to 4 year period. You know, and when I speak to my close friend, international guru Michael Kendrick, he says that no other country in the world has attempted to bring that number of people with disability in such a short period of time. I don't say that as an excuse, it just is, and we absolutely need to be ensuring that we are working as hard as we can so that every person with a disability has a good experience when they interact with the agency.
Right, thank you. Next question.
Hi, it's Jennifer Parry here from Sydney. I'm wanting to know regarding, I'm on the NDIS scheme, is there any work being undertaken to improve processes of communication regarding status of and progress of specific requests, whether it be an adaptive technology request once it's been assessed and submitted to the NDIA? Individual experience has demonstrated that, at least with me, that communication processes are not working if they're in place. There is no communication as to how a request is going, where it may be in the queue. I know it takes a long time just due to human resources, but understanding, being able to get an idea of at least being able to look up or speak about where it's up to a little bit more proactively would be really good, because I'm sure that the poor people in the call centres wouldn't want to be inundated with people saying, where is it up to, if we can look at it ourselves, if that makes any sense.
So the question was in relation to communication regarding timeframes in accessing assistive technology. So I think we acknowledge that to date, the timeframes and the process for accessing assistive technologies has not been ideal. And I think that's why we've made a couple of changes in recent times. One of them is the $1,500 rule, whereby typical equipment up to $1,500 will be approved without needing the oversight of an occupational therapist or professional. And the other one is for equipment above the $1,500 rule, the minister has announced that we will only require one quote going forward. We expect that this will assist with the timeframes, but I acknowledge that the timeframes has not been ideal to date.
Great, thank you, Matt. Who's next?
Matt, Richard Hammond-Spinkin from Devonport. If I remember clearly, you indicated that 7,500 people with vision loss have been included in the NDIS. Given that there are 350,000 of us in general terms, and that is a significant number based compared to the 460,000 of all people that would be going onto the NDIS, we are part of an ageing population with vision loss affecting people going into older age. How are you going to triage those that more importantly need the services through NDIS when you're going to have a volume of people coming into it, given the latest cohort of all inclusions now?
We just need to, just for access requirements, we'll just take a minute to make sure Matt has that question in front of him. So just give us half a minute.
So, look, I'm just a bit unclear on the question. Are we talking about people above 65, or are we talking about people coming into the scheme in the near future?
In the last cohort from the beginning of this year, that there are people for example, my age, I'm 59, we're all basically in it now, or not in it, but eligible for it. And yet that would be seen as a flood of people coming in because beforehand it was bracketed at certain ages. So and blindness is a significant effect on the ageing population. So I would imagine there'll be an absolute flood coming in. How do you triage the most important?
Well, it's an excellent question. So we have a number of people that if they don't qualify for the NDIS, by 65 will not end up in the scheme. So it's critical that when you have people that are coming up to that age threshold that they get into the office as quickly as possible. And so our team can take their information and ensure that they don't miss those critical deadlines, because it is a big factor. If you do miss that deadline, you become part of the aged care system.
Great. And Corey, can you still hear us?
Yes, we can.
Yep, great. Did you have any comments on that that last question as well? Was there anything you...
Look, you know, I think we'll all be watching with bated breath as people go past the age of 65 to ensure that we don't see the NDIA inappropriately suggesting that people's predominant needs are now ageing and therefore should be offered to aged care if the person's electing to remain in the NDIS. So just a small little nuance that we'll be seeing as this rolls out to make sure it happens. I suspect we're 5 years away from that really hitting the ground. When you hit that 70 mark and you start having more frailty issues come forward. But unfortunately, in the meantime, you'll be popped into the aged care system, talking to my aged care, and hopefully getting some help to navigate through how to translate a system that's not predominantly designed for you. I will say, though, if you were receiving state support services prior to the rollout of NDIS in your area, then you'll move into a small little program called the Continuity of Support Program, which will help you continue to receive the same services that you were being funded and in receipt of from your state provider or state-funded provider. That will continue just for those people who were receiving those services prior to the NDIS rolling out over the age of 65.
Yeah, great.
Angela, yep. It's John Simpson. Can I intervene? Because I have a question which actually might clarify the subject at hand, so I'll sort of jump in here. I think that the point that the previous caller is alluding to is the fact that most blindness occurs beyond the age, or its impact is mainly beyond the age, that people are eligible for the NDIA. And my question to both Matthew and to Corey is, we understand that great divide and we understand that that's a legislative thing. What I think we really want to know is what is the NDIA's position on trying to deal with that matter at a policy level? And to Corey, where does the broader aged care system sit in trying to address that? Because there is a distinct, and BCA faces this in our advocacy work all of the time, there's a distinct cut-off point where we have people who, just by the mere fact of the date of their birth, fall outside the NDIA. Now, that's an issue for government, but what I want to know is where does the agency and where does the aged care system through organisations such as Corey's sit in relation to supporting the need for that sort of change?
Thanks, John. It's a great question as well. So, effectively, the agency is working with the SAUG working group on mainstream interfacing with all the states and territories. And unfortunately, there are an incredibly large number of policy positions, not only in relation to aged care, but in relation to transport, justice, education, all of the interface areas. And so that is meaning that some of those clarifications, some of that work in terms of who does what, is taking some time to come down the pipeline.
And from Corey's perspective, it's quite easy. Whether you're getting the services from NDIS or aged care, our policy position is that it should be equitable levels of similar services.
That's BCA's position.
Yeah, that's great. That's what BCA is. Is talking about too in all of our conversations. So that's great to hear that backed up. Did we have Okay, great. So these are questions coming in from the text line.
Thanks. Oh, hello. It's not on.
Please leave it on. Don't turn it off.
Okay. Is that working?
Yep.
No.
Hello. Okay, good.
No, you're so close to the speaker.
Oh, okay. Right. That's going to be interesting. All right, so it's Anna, and I'm reading messages from the text line, questions from the text line now. This one is from Lauren about information and capacity building framework. So the ILC commissioning framework, policy framework, and recently released investment strategy all refer to the fact that local area coordinators are intended to provide support to all people with disability. This includes those who are not eligible for an individually funded package of supports under the NDIS. At present, this is not happening because they are all preoccupied with planning and support coordination. So what are the steps being taken to ensure this goal is eventually realised? Thanks.
Great question on that. So for those who don't know, when the NDIS was first constructed, the idea was that there should be a large part of the work that we do based on building an inclusive community. And there were sort of three tiers to that. One is a portion of the local area coordinator's work. The other thing was the ILC grant process and also the National Disability Strategy. All working in unison. Unfortunately, because of the incredible stress on the LACs with planning, you're absolutely right that some of the focus has gone on to bringing people with disability into the scheme. I want to make the point that it is really critical to understand that, you know, a third of the participants that are coming to the scheme by 2019 will have never received a dollar before. So ensuring that many of those people come in, you know, people with ageing carers, people in crisis, has been a huge priority. But as we move to full rollout, we absolutely expect to bring a lot of emphasis back to ensuring that people with disability that fall outside the 460,000 have access to the community organisations, being able to be part of the local YMCA, being able to be part of a mainstream school and being able to access employment as critical aims and objectives of the scheme. So we're currently working with our LACs and having numerous conversations about the portion of their services that should be devoted to mainstream services. We've also reimagined some of the ILC grants. You would have seen the recent ones that focused on people with disability and family organisations. I know that this year there will also be some grants that come out around information to people with disability and also focused on employment. I think that the combination of these types of things will improve the access of people traditionally sitting in what was called Tier 2.
Great, thank you very much. Was that you, Corey?
Yeah, can I just add to that and just point out to say CODA's view is the word all people includes all people, not all people under the age of 65. So we would hope that there's not an age cutoff on some of those services. It's the way that NDIS rolls them out.
Great. Thank you very much for that. We are running out of time for this question and answer session. So if there is maybe one more question around aged care specifically, just for that equity in questions as well. And then, of course, we will continue this conversation more from BPCA's perspective that will follow on this question and answer. But I think Lynn's got the microphone now.
Well, thank you. And look, I suppose I need to apologise in a way because it's not really a question. I do particularly want to thank Corey for what I think was a very good analysis, laying out of COTA's position in relation to this matter. But I also want to express my dismay and distress as someone who unfortunately has passed the 64 mark, at the fact that no one from my aged care was available today. This has happened so many times, and I am so tired of being put on the back burner. Everyone knows the issues. It's not that. It's just that people like me, I know I'm not just talking for myself, are so angry about sitting here, walking here, running here, climbing here, whatever, getting older and older as the time goes by, and watching our younger peers go through the experience of joining the NDIS and all of the associated problems, but also the associated support, and just being spectators. So I'm sorry, it's not a question, it's just an expression of extreme frustration.
Lynn, can I...
And I support you in that.
Oh, sorry, Corey.
I support you in that, and I'm very happy to make sure that gets conveyed through the department by myself in support of BCA conveying that as well.
Yeah. It's Emma Bennison here, Corey. I would like it if perhaps you and I, and perhaps Angela and you and I could talk about how best to convey that collectively, because I'm just as frustrated as you are, Lynn. It is absolutely despicable to me that try as we might, we couldn't get anybody. I think the excuse is, the Royal Commission's happening and therefore the department isn't speaking at the moment to people, and I think that's rather odd and unfortunate. But certainly, I just want to say to you that we share your absolute dismay and frustration about this. But that said, I am very grateful to Corey. I can't think of a better person to have spoken to us this afternoon. So, thank you so much for your time, Corey, and at fairly short notice too. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem. Just sorry I couldn't be there in person.
That's okay.
No worries. So I think we've come to time now for the questions to Matt and Corey, but we will continue our conversations, and if Matt and Corey do have time to stick around and hear what we've got planned as well, then it would be great to connect later for that. Could I just grab my...
Unfortunately, I my notes. I hadn't moved it to you before.
Angela, it's John.
Yeah.
Could I, before you go too far into this, make a comment about this issue of population and the size of the blindness community?
Yep.
I noted before that the suggestion was made that there are 350,000 people who are blind or vision impaired, and that they were potential targets for the NDIS, except for the age issue. I think we have to be very clear, and statistics vary. Some organisations talk about 450,000 people in Australia who are blind or vision impaired, others talk 350,000. It doesn't really matter. The point is that that figure represents the full spectrum of people, from those who have very usable low vision to those who are totally blind. It also represents those from birth to those many, many years past 65. So I think that we have to be quite specific in recognising that the number of people in Australia who could ever be eligible for the NDIS, given the current age limit, would be less than 100,000 people. It's not 350,000. Two-thirds of blindness occurs beyond retirement age. So you've got to discount for that to start. You've also got to discount for the range of vision loss. And people at the level of we call low vision are not likely to want substantial support from the NDIA. They may want some small amount of support in terms of assistive technology or something, low vision aids, those sorts of things. But they won't be looking for full care packages and so forth. So we need to be quite specific when we talk about figures in this area.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point, John. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank Corey very much for his participation. He has had to leave, to log off Zoom now. But just wanted to thank Corey very much for his contribution. And as Emma said, we will definitely be talking to Corey and Kosha to continue these conversations and to lobby government for significant change and support, especially in the my aged care and disability space. If we thank Corey. And since Matt's sitting up here, he can't really disappear, so so sorry, Matt, you're stuck. But I'll give you chocolate afterwards, I promise.
Done.
So I do want to keep this session open to the membership and to the delegates here to kind of lead BCA in what we're doing. I do have a couple of notes in terms of what we are doing, but I think we do keep you fairly updated along the way through BC News and New Horizons and other things like that. So I won't really go into much detail, and Matt already gave us some updates around the assistive technology or the changes to the assistive technology programs and around the provision of information in your preferred format. So I think that's some really useful information to kind of go forward, and we'll definitely be providing further feedback to the NDIA and to My Aged Care especially around those two issues. I will update you that Blind Citizens Australia and myself and Kristen are working with COTA Victoria on their assistive technology, ATOP. Assistive Technology for Older People. That's the one. there's a working group around that. That is Victorian focused at the moment, but that is a great stepping stone. And that's just because there are that kind of crossover state based, equipment and aids programs that have been in place, and just to get some clarification around how that will be nationalised or if it will be nationalised and how people can access that. So that is some ongoing conversations that we're having. But I will, I think, Emma, did you have anything else?
No, I don't
And also, also just to remind you or to update you that BCA has formed an aged care reference group. So that's to lead the consultation around aged care issues. So we can have a true representation of BCA members' views and issues that we can then bring forward in our submissions and our further work. So I will hand it over to you guys, the delegates here, to ask further questions or to continue the discussion.
Good afternoon, Matt. Thank you for your presentation. My name's Annette from New South Wales. I do qualify for the NDIS and do have a plan in place for blindness, low vision. But my question to you is that I have unrelated illnesses and health issues other than blindness, which the NDIS does not cover, and therefore other agencies will not address or recognise or assist me with now that the NDIS as it is in place. Do you have any recommendations about how people with a primary disability go about accessing assistance for secondary health problems, especially moving towards into older age?
Firstly, let me really sympathise with your situation. It's been a really difficult thing for participants who have a disability but also have associated health. In some cases, people have kind of dropped through the cracks while the negotiations between the agency and the health system are going on. I'd be happy to take your situation offline and see what we could do to support the situation with our health colleagues. But I just want to make the point that it's very important that with the mainstream interfaces that each section of our system in terms of health, transport, the education system is responsible for its own mandate, because the NDIS is designed to ensure that people with disability can be part of their community like any other citizens, and that is our mandate, and that's where resources should go, and where other parts of the system in terms of health need to step up and support people. I think it's important that it happens in that fashion. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And can I just also comment, Annette, BCA is updating our health policies at the moment, so the National Policy Council has prioritised that as an area that really needs an update and a refresh. So we'd really we will do some more formal consultation around that. But also another national the National Disability Agreement, we provided some feedback for the review of that late last year, and then they're about to open some consultation around the National Disability Strategy. So that covers the mainstream services and the interactions with the disability services too. So we're definitely very aware of that process, and we're very keen to get members' feedback on what we should include in that and how that will work going forward as well.
I just wanted to point out that the other illness is genetic and is going to kill me. I will die from the other illness, not the blindness. So the NDIS is helping with my lifestyle, but I will die from the other illness. So this is where I believe it's critical that we need to look at more than one we have to link that
holistic approach.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you, and I will take your details after the session.
Okay, who had another question? Yep.
My response here is to Lynn and John. My name's Martin Stewart. Lynn, your passion is palpable and it comes out of strong feelings that BCA must hear and address. We have a condition that is very often as a result of getting older than 65. Our age demographic of our membership, I guess, would be older than 65 as a majority. Therefore, on those reasons alone, let alone many others, we must prioritise this issue. It actually must be number one for quite a while until it's resolved. And I know that's the probable intention, but I don't care if people over 65 will or will not choose a program. What I care about is they have that choice. And that's what I want to say here. It's a powerful problem that we must powerfully attend to. And thanks, Lynn, for raising it through your passion. We don't want it to become bitterness because we're leaving it. Thank you.
Yep, next question.
Hi, my name's Jen Nichols from Hobart. From Hobart. Employment access or access to employment is A, big for many people who are blind or have low vision, and B, it's been addressed this afternoon numerous times because it's quite a big thing for the NDIS. My comment kind of comes from the word outsourcing, but in my own experience, I've recently won a job with the NDIA, and I know that there are other people around Australia who have disabilities or vision loss working for your agency. And I, in fact, had a lady on my interview panel who had a seeing eye. Is that me doing that?
Yeah, it's all right.
Sorry. I guess I'd just like to mention that I was interviewed, the job was gazetted last April. I was interviewed, kept up to date, twice in July, once in August. I was interviewed in September. My referees were checked in October. I received nothing. I then got an email on the 13th of December saying, blah, 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 congrats, your application has been successful. And I burst into tears because after 7 years, that was a long time to be out of work. Don't touch me. However, the next line read that the position had now been filled. Sorry. Sorry. And this is with the NDIA. The big problem that I have is I now remain on the order of merit for 1 year from the date the job was gazetted, which is another 3 weeks. And for an agency that wants people back in work, why do you do that? That's all.
So I just want to say I'm really sorry about that experience. Again, if I could get your details offline and I could take it up and find out what's occurred there. I just want to make a general comment that I think the record in Australia for people with disability and employment is abysmal, and many of us have been underemployed, unemployed, have not had the opportunities that other people have had, and I'll take that individual case up with you straight after this, and ensure that I get back to you as quickly as I possibly can.
Jen, it's Emma Bennison here, and I just wanted to say, I just wanted to thank you for having the courage to raise that issue in a public forum, and I'm sorry that you're upset, and I hope that someone is assisting you. But I also wanted to reassure you, not that it's much help, because clearly it's not working, but I did want to reassure you that at every possible opportunity, I raise the matter of employment with the NDIA, and I mean every possible opportunity. I attend forums with the NDIA about every, 8 weeks, I think it is, and every single time I find an opportunity, Matt will attest to this, it must drive him mad, to bring up the issue of employment. And I also want to reassure you that I happen to know that Marianne Diamond also raises the issue at every opportunity. So it's not working, and I'm certainly not trying to say that it's doing any good, but what I am saying is that someone, and some of us are raising it with the people who need to hear it. So I hope that kind of helps somewhat.
Great. Did we have... Yep, I think up the bat... Yep, you can work it out.
I actually do have a question.
Sorry, can you say your name?
Sorry, it's Kirby from Hobart. I have a... Well, it's a question that it's probably not necessarily one that you can answer, but my question is to do with both needs of people not being met, or if, or not being met properly. First of all, I have a comment, which is that people's needs for assistive, particularly in the area of assistive technology, are either A, not being met properly, or B, are being met with something that is being put to the NDIA as a substitute, which I can attest to because I have said supposed substitute on my lap, which isn't a substitute, which I suppose is what I'm getting to. But my question is, with regards to that, is A, what is the NDIA doing about it? And B, why are these alternative devices, and I won't go into specific details, but why are certain things being given to people and other people are getting what people like myself want but can't or need? Because, yes, the device I have in front of me, okay, yes, it's good. And I'll be the first to say that I am not entirely ungrateful. However, it is not a proper substitute.
Yeah, absolutely, and we do hear what you're saying. Matt, did you... as Matt said in his presentation, I'm sure you heard that that there have been some recent changes to assistive technology, and there is that $1,500 limit now that you don't need to get quotes for, so it should be easier. And I know that obviously, you know, perhaps you that wasn't in place when you did get the assistive technology that you use now, but I'm sure that for your reviews in the future that will be in place, and that and that you will be able to access some of that technology a lot easier.
Hang on, you need a microphone.
And we're also running out of time. BCA does update with the membership on especially those types of things around assistive technology. But if you do have specific feedback, then that's you can definitely bring your individual cases to us. And if you need assistance in reviews, then we do have Kristen, who's our support linkages officer, who can help you with that.
Sweet.
Hi, my name's Wayne Hawkins. Just a question for you, Matt. Thank you for your presentation, and nice to see you. My question is around the ILC process. There's been, to my knowledge, at least 2 National Readiness Grants rounds, possibly 3. The process for that, I think the first National Readiness Grant was for a year, funding for a year. The second one was for funding up to 2 years. Is there been any discussion within the agency of what happens to those readiness grants projects that are really successful and have implemented change for the community to be funded ongoing?
Firstly, hi Wayne, it's great to see you again. So in terms of what's happening with the readiness grants, because there's been a shift in terms of the way in which ILC's focus, it's a bit unclear. It depends on whether the readiness grant, which as you say is particularly successful, falls under one of the new categories. So if it fulfills the ambition of providing information to people with disability around being part of the community, then there probably is other avenues for it. But if it came in under the first round of grants but doesn't fulfil one of the criteria, then it's a little bit more ambiguous in terms of what might happen from here. Yeah.
Yeah, great. How are we for time, John?
I've got about 2 minutes.
1 minute? Who has the quickest question ever? And who has a microphone?
Never quick.
Okay, it's Katrina Taylor, Western Victoria. This is actually a question for BCA.
Great.
Oh, good. So I know that BCA has been really good with getting info out to the membership about MAC and NDIS and getting info through workshops and other means, and I thank BCA for that. I'm also aware that a lot of the membership aren't on the lists aren't on the internet. How is BCA trying to get the word to them, and how is we as the membership can help spread the word to the other people that are members that aren't necessarily going to be as clued up as those that are on the list and on the internet?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Thank you so much for asking it. We do try and very much acknowledge that not everyone gets on the lists, but we do have... we're back to quarterly editions of BC News, and that does go to all of our subscribers. Yes, that definitely deserves a clap. And so, yeah, we will. Our focus is to provide those important updates through that. Also, New Horizons, that is a weekly radio program that Vaughan coordinates. And also, we have a new phone system that Ricky may have mentioned once or twice. Part of that phone system are recordings that we put up of what is happening and some updates from our programs and the information, you know, programs and events and updates through that as well.
There is one. Can I say something?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. There is one more thing which we are going to be doing very soon, and that is to create an announcements only list, because I'm acutely conscious. I'm glad you like that idea. Occasionally at 3 o'clock in the morning I have good ideas. I am very conscious that not everyone has the time or the inclination to read the discussions on list, and some people just want information. They just want to know what it is that BCA is doing about X, Y or Z. So it will be an announcement only list. You won't be able to reply to it. And if you want to reply, you'll have to reply individually to one of us if you want to ask a question. But I hope that will help. But I also want to say that in terms of all of you as members, I really encourage you if you can and if you have the capacity to do so, to play an active role in reaching out to people who you know might not have internet access, to let them know what's going on. Because, I mean, there's only so much that we can do, and we certainly can't force people to listen to New Horizons or read BC News or whatever else. So it's really important that you let us know. And the other thing is that there are still quite a number of members who have email but haven't given us their email addresses, haven't updated their membership records for quite a significant period of time. So it's not so much new members, it's existing members who have email but haven't shared that with us. So even if your preferred format is Braille, or large print or whatever it is, we still would like to have your email address because there are times when we want to get information to you quickly and we want all members to have it irrespective of whether they're subscribed to the list. So if you haven't given us your email address or you think it's out of date, please share it with us.
Yeah, and we do also have a text line as well that hopefully we'll be using a bit more now that we've got Crystal on board as membership engagement officer, and so whatever her role is. Hopefully that's another way that we can send, you know, those short, sharp messages that then you can either call us for more information or refer online, which it will be, you know, more information will be there. Now, I am getting the it's time to wrap up message, so I'd just like to thank you all for your questions, and I hope that we can continue this conversation through the office and through other other consultation processes that we have throughout the year. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Dale, that's better. And thank you to Angela for coordinating that great session. It's greatly appreciated. So let's extend our thanks to Ange for her work there. I have three pieces of information, two of which are worthwhile. The other is a piece of gratuitous information. I'll start with that. The Adelaide Crows won the AFW Grand Final, beating Carlton. I knew Chelsea, settle down. I knew Chelsea Bartlett would want to hear that. We're about to say farewell to some of our radio audience, so I want to cover two quick things before they leave us. Firstly, our friends at IRA, not our paid or... there's no consultancy in this, but Suman has offered for those of us who are in Hobart for the next couple of days and those who live in the area... The whole of Hobart is an IRA free site for the next couple of days.
And that's
out as far as taking you out to the airport and all of those areas and the environment. The other thing is for our listening audience, don't forget our BC Backers promotion campaign that winner will be drawn tonight. If you want to become a BCA backer, make a small monthly contribution that amounts to a significant amount at the end of the year, then go online to the BCA website, go to the PayPal link on the first page, enrol there for the program. Tony Grant will see that message and put you in the draw for tonight. And we do have a competitive draw for tonight. So a number of people have taken advantage of this opportunity, so I thank them in advance for their support. With those few words, I want to thank our radio and audience who are leaving us. And on the way out, here's a word from our major sponsor, Vision Australia.
Vision Australia is a leading national provider of blindness and low vision services in Australia, supporting more than 25,000 people of all ages, life stages and circumstances who are blind or have low vision. We work in partnership with Australians who are blind or have low vision to provide the support and resources needed to live the life they choose. For more details, visit visionaustralia.org.
Vision Australia.
Blindness.
Low vision.
Opportunity.
Alter the three judges.